All right, it's Tuesday again. We are live here, chopping up with Chef Don. I'm Chef Don. Super excited today. We have our guest today is Dave Cahoot. So he's with us. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Don.
Nice to see you, my friend.
Thanks, brother.
It's a little different this way. Normally, it's most of the times when you're in charge of the microphone, normally, right? Let's talk a little bit about your jacket right there. Talk is cheap. So let's talk about who you are and what you do first.
Well, we'll back it up even more. I met you where?
Teen Challenge.
And I was coming in speaking as a chapel speaker, right?
Yes, sir.
So probably to take it a little bit further back with my career, because kids will ask me, where'd you learn how to speak? I'm like, well, I sold copiers straight commission for 16 years. So you'd stand behind the unit, have the client come in as close as they could to touch the buttons, feel the paper, smell the toner, and led with questions and learned how to close. Then in 2006, and I'm jumping around a little bit, passing some stuff up, we had a few folks who believed in me and what we were doing with kids. And they said, here's a check, go start an organization and go get to as many kids as you can. I looked at the check and went, we could do that. So I started the organization in 06 with the name Talk is Cheap, because honestly, you and I have both met a lot of people who sound like they really mean what they say, but they don't.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So the tagline to Talk is Cheap is talk is cheap, but the message is, what's the message? You're not an accident. You're not a mistake. There's a purpose for your life. God's created you for a reason. We've gotten a lot of traction in schools all around the country. Mm-hmm. Our primary focus obviously is Youngstown because I live here, but you know, we'll be in Florida in a couple of weeks and I've already got a couple of speaking opportunities lined up. Wherever I go, I always want to try to connect with some kids and let them know they matter. When I can share the spiritual aspect of my life, that's obviously most important to me. I want to tell these kids about the hope of Christ and what God can do in their lives if they'll let him.
Right.
So that's what we did with Talk is Cheap in 06. It's now 2021. Yeah. It feels like it just flew.
It usually does.
It'll soon be 17 years. My wife, my bride, Susie, quit her job a couple of years ago to come on staff with me and help me because I need a lot of help.
Most guys do.
And it's been fun. I mean, honestly, people always say, do you ever get nervous when you're speaking? I'm like, no. I mean, I just don't, because I know what I'm doing. I'm going to go out there and tell a kid who doesn't think they matter that they do. And that's not very hard.
Right. Especially, again, because like, you know, again, standing in the presence of greatness, right? It's kind of one of your taglines, right?
That's my thing, yeah.
So you kind of know in that situation already that you know that there's, you know, that broke kid's out there regardless, like kind of going in, you know, there's at least one or two kids out there that are probably in the same position that I'll say like I was as a child. Right. Or that mental spot of like it just didn't matter.
Right.
So you already kind of know that going in. So you're going in victorious, knowing that there's already a viable impact like waiting to happen.
Right.
So you're just kind of going there to just initiate it. So it's not like a stressful situation.
No. In fact, I'm grinning because a few years ago I'm a little OCD. So I always have a nice dress shirt on when I go into a school, sometimes a jacket, but I always have my shirt hung in my car. So I drive to the venue, whether that's, you know, a couple hours away or I stay overnight somewhere and then go. And when I get to the school, I'll usually bring all my gear in, depending on what I need to set up, screen, projector, sound. And then I'll go in the restroom and I'll change and I'll take, you know, t-shirt off and I'll put my dress shirt on. And one morning I beat the buses. I'd had everything set up already. And I could hear kids coming in, and this kid, and I won't use the language because I don't know where we're at in this world with
PG-13-ish.
Okay.
But yeah.
But the kid's like, oh, I hear we got a speaker today. It's probably going to stink. He said something different. Well, he didn't know. I heard him and I went, oh, I yelled in the bathroom. Said, oh, I hope not. I hope this speaker doesn't stink. Got real quiet. You could hear the footsteps like walk away.
Right.
So in the middle of my assembly, I said, and I don't know who you were up there that said you were hoping that the assembly didn't stink, but I hope I'm doing a pretty good job in helping you understand. I'm just here to make you think. If you can think about some of the things I've said today and how it pertains to you, this was a success. And, you know, I won't tell you that afterwards the kid came down. I don't remember that part of it, but we don't know who we're talking to.
Yeah.
But we do know that a lot of people we are speaking to are hurting. They're angry. They're sad. They feel betrayed. The people, the very people who were supposed to be the people they could trust, broke that trust.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just kind of roll in there and think, if we can just let a kid know they matter. And then, of course, there's the after work. When I'm finished, I always say, I won't leave until the last student or adult has a chance to sit down or stand there and talk to me for a few minutes and ask whatever questions or share whatever you'd like. And honestly, Don, there's times like if I'm doing camps and there's really no restriction of the next class period, I've stood there for 2.5 hours after I spoke for 90 minutes
right.
with kids, sometimes adults, but mostly kids. And again, when I get in the car, I'm exhausted. I can do 7 classes in a row or I could do one. But when I get in that car to leave, I'm spent. But I've done something that I know mattered.
Right. So that's the fill up in itself. All right. For you. So like, again, we always talk spiritually. So you could pour out, but you know, you got to fill up.
That's right.
So even though you're at the end, you're physically exhausted, mentally, you're drained. I'll say the word empathy, right? So you kind of probably carry a lot of that feeling that hurt that the people might bring to you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it fills your cup, per se.
Very much so.
But yeah. Even though there's that hard side
yeah.
of it.
Yeah. Even though it's draining emotionally, spiritually, mentally, it's also very fulfilling.
Right.
Now I won't lie to you. And my bride would tell you the truth that when we get in the car to drive home, if it's any length of distance, she's like, "You want me to drive?" And she's not saying that because I'm a bad driver, because I'm an awesome driver.
Of course, but we all are, right? We're the best.
Yeah. Every guy thinks he's a right. bad driver. But because
our wives
she knows,
tend to differ.
About 10 minutes into the drive, I just start staring. And my mind's replaying what I said, what I did, mm-hmm. who I was with, what our conversation was. And it's easier, honestly, if she's driving and I can just kind of sit there and maybe just crash for a few minutes. Yeah. Sometimes, honestly, not to be Joe spiritual here, but just to pray for those kids.
Sure, well, it's still fresh.
What I just heard was serious and life-changing to them. And, you know, God forbid we ever poo-poo someone's story like, you know, little buddy, it'll be okay. No, that's a little kid, and he or she doesn't understand how it's going to be okay. And we can't just tell them.
Yeah.
We got to let them see what we've been through here, what we've just heard for 90 minutes. And then they start to put the pieces in together and think, well, maybe if he can do it, I can do it type of thing.
Sure. I want to go back thinking, hi, Debbie, what's up?
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey, thank
Debbie,
you.
Young Sound Click is in the house. Debbie, this is Dave.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
We've nice talked about you. Dave a couple yeah. times, so I'm kind of excited you guys get to link up afterwards and talk a little bit.
I hope there were no bad words also a part of that.
I don't think so.
Nice to meet you.
I'm very familiar with your...
But I remember the video. There was a video you showed of a young man. Can we talk about that right now a little bit?
Sure.
Travis?
Well, what's the video?
The video was the young man in the hospital. I don't remember.
That's
off
okay.
Hand. I just remember
this
a young
the
man
who passed away from
yes.
brain cancer.
Yes.
Okay. So that's okay.
I remember parts of that story, but again, it stuck with me enough to where I remember parts of that story, but I didn't remember the details. But there was again, it was that type of moment.
Right.
6 years ago in Teen Challenge, 5 years ago, when again the whole talk is cheap and staying in the presence of greatness and how your message impacts, it really wasn't so much. It's different because a lot of times people get this talk and then I'm talking about them.
Right.
And you kind of came at a totally different approach.
Yeah.
You came and talked about somebody else.
I appreciate that because I struggle with that. When I hear other speakers, I'm like, man, they just did a 35-minute commercial for themselves. Am I supposed to talk more about me?
Right. Well,
and yet the tagline at the bottom of my email says it's all about him.
Exactly.
So exactly. I can't talk about him, capital H, in a public school.
Right.
But what I can do is I can be the living evidence of what he has done. Chris Sutton was a young man that I had in my youth group back in the days when I was called Pastor Dave. I still had hair. Okay.
That's a while ago.
Oh, yeah. Because the kids were like, Pastor Dave, when you start losing your hair here, we're going to plant little trees like an island. I'm like, yeah, we're not doing that. But I had done a YMCA sleepover, oddly uh-huh. enough, right across the street here at night on a Friday night, 10:30, about 5-6 different youth programs all came together. We had a couple hundred kids. Thank God, a lot of adults. But this young man, very quickly became a huge adjutant to me. If I asked him to go left, he went right. If I asked him to go up, he went down. And it was all night, it seemed like, fighting with him. And like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, I lost it and just screamed his name and said, "Stop running!" And he looked at me and he started smiling and he started running backwards. And he said, "I can't help it. I'm having too much fun." And I'm like, oh man, pancake breakfast can't come quick enough right. Saturday morning. So he leaves. He's not in my youth program. I don't know him. And, see ya. Well, the mother somehow got my information and called me a couple of days or weeks later. I don't remember anymore. And she introduced herself. And I wasn't connecting dots yet because it's not like I remembered this kid's name that well. I didn't know him. But she said, my son was at your YMCA sleepover. We just got some really bad news. The Northside Hospital was still open. We're at the Northside Hospital. He's scared. The doctors are giving some different options for this kid, for our son. And he wants you to come to the hospital and see him. And I'm thinking, you gotta be kidding me, because I don't even really like this kid.
I want to choke him last time I see him.
Right? But the epiphany of that is, you know what? You don't have to like someone to love them.
That's it.
And I, you know, I got the young man's room number, and I went to see him. And, you know, of course, I'm not comfortable going into that scenario, but it's what we do as youth leaders. You know, we meet the kid where they're at. He's in the hospital. So I get there, and when I walked in, the doctor was there, and he was talking to the mom and the dad and the brother, whom I'd never met before. So I kind of stood in the background.
Awkward.
But here's where it got even worse, is I'm listening to the doctor, but I'm watching Chris. See, one of the things I learned from the sales days is when you make a statement, watch people's body language, how that's hitting them, how that makes them feel or what they think. Because they may not tell you, but body language tells you a lot. So I'm looking at Chris, and I can see he's terrified. So I looked up at the doctor, and I did. I went, excuse me, doctor. And the whole family looked at me like, shut up, the doctor's talking.
Right.
And I said, "You." And I still get chill bumps right now when I talk about this.
Yeah.
I said, you're really scaring him. Do you think maybe you could go out in the hallway and explain this to mom and dad and your his brother? And the doctor's like, oh, yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
You
and I wanted to go,
so,
good for you, Mr. Common Sense clicked in. So he leaves, and Chris is laying there. He looks at me and goes, am I going to die? And I said, yeah. Yes, you are going to die. Chris, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
But you're not going to die today. You're not going to die this week. You're not going to die this month. You're going to fight this until you have nothing left and you don't quit. And he got this grin on his face. I said, why is that funny? He goes, because I asked my mom to have you come because I knew you'd say stuff like that. And I looked at him. I said, well, I don't know if you think I'm joking or not, but I'm telling you, bro, if you let God have a part in this, he'll do something with this cancer and this crisis that will blow everybody's mind. So that began my introduction to his life. He was in the seventh grade going into eighth at Boardman Schools or Fitch, maybe. I don't remember anymore, AMS. But bottom line to the story. So Chris has this tumor in his chest, the size of a small football, wrapped around his aorta and his spine. And the clinic, or one of the big hospitals up there, took the tumor out. And they radiated and chemoed him. And the poor kid had like a purple burn mark on his chest from the radiation. He lost all of his hair from the cancer treatments. But when he was finally allowed to come back to youth group, he came to ours, which at that point, you know, I loved the kid. So it wasn't a matter of, crap, he's back. But when he was walking up the sidewalk, and I'll never forget this till the day I die. Here's Chris walking up the sidewalk. And I know the other boy who's with him, his name was Nick Rowe, Nicholas Rowe, grown man now. But as Nick and Chris are walking up the sidewalk, I know why Chris is bald. But Nick's bald. And I said to Nick, I said, what's with the do? And he said, if my best friend's going to be bald because of cancer, so am I. And I looked at him and I went, that's how friends roll. Yeah. Now, when I tell that story in the school, I always ask a question, which is, how many of you, if you're going through cancer and losing your hair, would be grateful to have one friend who would be willing to shave their hair off so you wouldn't be the only bald kid roaming the halls? Every hand goes up.
Sure.
And I say, good, but it's a trick question. Be that friend.
Right.
The crazy part about Nick and Chris is Nick went to Lowville schools. Chris went to Boardman or Fitch. I can't remember now.
Oh, wow.
They weren't even in the same hallways. So again, fast forward, Chris is cancer free from eighth grade until his junior year. And I don't want to mess up stories. You know, mom and dad might get to watch this, or even Kyle, his brother, and go, that's not what happened. But as my memory recalls, he got brain cancer. And the cancer that he had in his brain was inoperable. And in fact, it started to impact one of his eyes, where he had to wear an eye patch. And he was going to die. Hospice was already brought in. This kid's a junior at Boardman. And, you know, the reason it's talk is cheap is because don't tell me, just show me. Okay. So I thought, I got an idea. Let's go to the principal. I won't say the name anymore, of Boardman High School, and see if we can get a big banner put up on the wall and have people, you know, kids come in and sign it. And the principal said, well, we couldn't do that, because if we did that for him, we'd have to do it for all of our students. And I'm a salesperson, remember? So we answer a question with a question. I said, well, Mr. So-and-so, how many juniors do you have right now dying of brain cancer? And he looked at me and said, go ahead and put it up. So they did. Well, it was a huge banner. And the Sutton family still has it. It was a huge banner. People from the community, that's in the days when you could still walk into a school with no security, were signing it. And I'll never forget, he was at the hospital. He wasn't doing well. They were going to be releasing him soon to come home with hospice. And poor little guy was just beat up and tired. But the cheerleaders of Boardman Schools brought the banner in their little outfits. And Chris just beamed. Just beamed. And I thought, it was like a breath of fresh air for that kid. Plus, there's a lot of cute girls in his hospital room, you know? Not soon after hospice, he's back in Youngstown, Boardman area. He picked a song for his funeral, picked some pictures for his funeral, picked a saying he liked, no fears, no regrets, just a future with a promise, that he wanted his mom to have embossed on his Bible that would lay in the casket with him. And he picked me. And I still get emotional because, one, there were a lot of other good speakers, if you will. But it's a John Maxwell line. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Exactly. And Chris knew. So he's like, I want you to do my funeral, but you got to promise me something. I'm like, okay. He goes, you got to be funny. I said, Chris, man, I can't be messing around at a 17-year-old's funeral, because if I do that, there are going to be a lot of upset people. He goes, but they need to know that there's joy in Christ and we can have a peace about the future and we shouldn't be afraid of dying, because that's a gift. We get to go. And I'm sitting there looking at the 17-year-old kid, which I agree with all that, but he's 17.
So that's heavy, right? It's a lot of wisdom for a 17-year-old kid to have position.
My promise to Chris was that everywhere I went and spoke, I would always play his song, show his picture, tell a story, and ask that question. He died on Thanksgiving 2000. The day before I got to speak to him, mom actually held the phone to his ear because he was in a semi-coma state. But I told him, I said, you know, Chris, I'm proud of you. You fought the good fight. You didn't quit. Your body's tired. You're allowed to go home. And now, you know, this is me talking to Chris. So if it's not politically correct, sorry. I said, you jerk, if you beat me to heaven, I will see you again. But in the meantime, I promise I will tell your story, show your picture, and play that song, because it really will touch people. Dude, it's impacted over 800,000 people in five different countries. That's plus amazing. The United States of America. And it still does. And Mr. and Mrs. Sutton, they'll be like, you still tell Chris's story. I said, Judy, I have to. Eric, I have to. I made a promise to him. Now, truthfully, because it's such a heavy-duty story, during the days of COVID, when I was doing mostly virtual, I backed way off on that stuff because people were, we are all still spent.
Sure.
I didn't think they needed that much of an emotional punch. If it was a tougher crowd, I threw that one in because I knew that would really put a stir in their hearts. And it has. I've had kids tell me that they literally changed the direction of where they were going into college to become pediatric oncologists, so that they could be a part of the cure for cancer with kids. And I'm like, that was not the game plan. That was not the intent. But that's how the message has impacted their lives. Mm-hmm. So that's that story.
Yes. Yeah. And again, to tie this even together, I was even just humbled by you telling that story again, because it dawned on me that a few weeks ago, you reached out to me. Now I'm going to get teared up.
Don't.
And you actually asked if you could use my picture from Teen Challenge.
Yep.
And you actually told somebody at, you know, an event that you used me, kind of how you just did with this young man.
Yep.
And wow, right? Like I said, you got me right now. That's good.
Wow. The host is tearing up. Right. Listen, no, I was in Azelle, Texas. Azelle, Texas, speaking at Teen Challenge.
Yeah.
And again, I don't have any rapport with these people. And I say these people, you as well. I don't know you guys. So I have to go in generalities and speak softly so that we're not like jumping on buttons that get you all emotionally messed up. But that night at this Teen Challenge in Texas, I'm like, why are there women here? So I said, did this program become co-ed? They're like, no, this is family night. I'm like, oh, brother. Because that is a whole different dynamic when you got mom and sister there and a wife there and maybe children.
Yeah.
But I thought, no, I can stick to this game plan because I'm telling the story of what God did in your life, Borden's life, Post's life, and some others who also went through the program but didn't complete it and didn't live to tell about it.
Yeah.
And the challenge to the men that night was, number one, first and foremost, you must finish this program.
Yeah.
And I'm allowed to be candid here, right?
Yeah.
And I tell them, I'm glad that you may not drink or gamble or whatever your addiction drugs is. That's wonderful. But if you don't give your life to Christ, and again, I don't even know where you two sit on this, so I'm just going to tell you what he said. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but through me. So I tell them, I don't mind that you're going to be clean, but if you're not going to give your life to Christ, this whole night's been a failure.
Yeah.
Because you'll be clean and still go to hell.
Right.
And people are like, well, still you can't tell people they're going to hell. I'm not. I'm repeating what I've just read here. You're a cook, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, I found something out about cooking, grilling, and baking. They're
totally
not
different.
The same.
No.
And here's me winging some stuff into the baking stuff, thinking, what a little bit of this could be really much of a difference. My wife's like, did you put too much? I'm like, well, how did you know? Because you can't do that. It's got to be perfect.
That's why you don't bake? That's why I don't
bake.
I don't like the precision of baking.
The exactness.
Yes. I like to, you know, Swedish chef and borgy-borg and just kind of toss and go, right? Like,
yeah.
And again, realizing again, like, again, we talk Canada here all the time. Like, that's how I've lived majority of my life. Even now, as out of the addiction process, again, talking just this past week, learning that I'm still dealing with life, right? I'm still have some of the same tendencies that it might not be the addiction itself manifesting, but some of that same type, maybe mentality or old behaviors that can still hang around. And again, for me, it was actually talking with my wife and figuring that I'm living in a constant state of fight or flight. And it was really mind-blowing because here I am 5 years, right, down the road, out of teen challenge. Sobriety is really not my issue anymore. I'm not going to say it's not an issue. I will never say it's not an issue. But it's always an issue, but it's not the forefront,
right.
Blast me in the face every day, sober. So, you know, but it was still maintaining a business and you know, being this stuff and talking and being active in the community, all that good stuff. But I was still, like, dealing with stuff the way that I used to, by creating chaos.
I do that too, though, Don.
But I think it's part of it. But yeah,
I think it's a part of our personality.
Right.
You know, we come into a room that's quiet and organized. And this happened to me at chapel once here at Teen Challenge. I come in, I'm like, what's going on? And the kid in the back that was running the board, and you know, I'm not trying to throw him under the bus. He's like, I'm like, I feel like I'm back at St. Charles getting yelled at by a nun because, you know, I'm out of line here. But you know what? It was his world at that moment. He was running sound praise and worship in the back. And, you know, I come in here like, hey, and he's like, no, we're not at that level yet. And I'm like, I got to figure that out sometimes, you know, now's not the time to be at 100%. Okay. But if I could be, that's why I sleep so well at night.
Yeah.
My bride literally wakes me up. Are you already asleep? I'm like, I really was.
Yeah.
But now I'm not. Why? You know, because I'm tired, man. Today I got up at 4:30. I did the leadership stuff at 6. And then I didn't have a whole lot of TIC work today. I did some service-oriented stuff for some others. But I'm tired. Mm-hmm. And by the time I get home at night, you know, and I do my hair and all that stuff, I'm ready to go to bed. But tomorrow, I will interrupt myself and say, if tonight someone were to call me at a certain time where I'm shutting it down, I will ramp it right back up. If that's what's necessary in order for that person, you know, why is this talk is cheap? Because if you remember what Cain and God's exchange was, God says, where's your brother? And the smart aleck response was, am I my brother's keeper? The answer is yes we are. Our brother and sister, we are our keeper. Anything I can do to help you. Now, you and I both know, and I don't know you yet, and you haven't said anything, so I don't know you, but I do know this. If you allow people to take advantage of you, they will. And in the addiction world, you know for sure it's legit that a lot of them will. I remember the first time I walked out of Mahoning County Jail after a pastoral visit, I turned and I looked at the building. I'm like, so many of these people are innocent. And then everybody who knew that world that I knew I didn't know yet, like, dude, you have no clue. Like 99% of them are guilty. I'm like, that's horrible. Well, it's because I don't know that world. But I do know this. God, like you, has called us to go make a difference, whether that's with food or word. But see, if your food don't taste good, then the kids are like, hey, man, that guy is nice and all, but this food's horrible.
Right.
That's not the case. You do things. There was a church we attended where the pastor came up with a term. I'm sure existed prior, but do everything kingly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were serving something to someone that was very important, you would make sure all your I's were dotted, T's were crossed. Well, you know what? Everybody is that important. And when you treat them that way, it comes back. You know, you reap what you sow.
It goes even back to how you, like, again, it's basically you're elevating, but you're constantly elevating people.
Trying to.
I would say you are. I know people that you've had an impact. Again, myself, you're definitely impacting and uplifting all the time. Again, maybe not in your, I'm not saying you're perfect in your own time, but
right.
You're always at it, like the fire behind us. Like, you'll throw that extra log
so
on the fire.
Too. That fire is making it so hot.
But you throw the extra log on there, like you said, if you have to, you'll throw the extra log on there and turn the gas up.
That's right.
In the moment.
Yep.
Even though you're empty, it's your last push, you will go and you will turn up because you kind of know what's at stake, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because, again, some of the stuff really is life or death.
Yep.
I mean, at the end of the day, not so much just as physically, but spiritually as well.
Yeah.
Again, let
me finish one thought about this, but don't forget yours. Okay. Although my mentor, Dr. McGowan, Chuck McGowan, said, a man who burns a candle at both ends is not that bright. And of course, not being that bright intellectually, I'm like, I don't know what you mean. You can't do it all day and all night, David. You'll burn yourself out. So I know there has to be, as you've talked about, a time of respite, a time of Sabbath. We're horrible at Sabbath, but go ahead.
So I had a quick question. So you obviously help so many people. I don't know if you have a number of how many kids you've actually spoken to, but I think you said 800,000?
We have. Between the things I had done prior and now Talk is Cheap, over 800,000 kids and adults.
So now, when you were young, before you started doing what you did now, like, were you raised? Did you have the influences in your life to tell you what you're telling kids now? Or
I grew up Roman Catholic.
Okay.
My mom and dad were very serious about the Catholicism, their relationships with God. Mom and dad both went to Catholic grade school, high school. Dad went to Benedictine. Mom went to a Catholic all-girls school. And I'm not going to say the name because my dad will tell me that wasn't the name. But it was an all-girls school in Cleveland, now gone. But so they were very serious about the Catholic faith.
Okay.
But they lived it too. Okay. They weren't like crazy people who on Sunday all of a sudden tightened it up.
Okay.
So we saw a good example. I was just telling a guy today while I was doing this service project. My mom, I don't know what saint it was, okay? So I don't want to be saying saints' names either. But one of the guys she believed, like, had a direct line to God. She would put notes in the statue. And it was in the curio of the hallway coming into the house. And, of course, at first it stood straight up.
Yeah.
But as the notes continued to start coming out the bottom of this thing, it was like leaning up against the glass in the curio. I'm like, man, she's praying her brains out for me. She was. So was my dad. So were my sisters. You know, when I came to Christ, and people go, well, you know, if you're a Catholic, you already knew Jesus. Trust me, I was Catholic and I didn't know Jesus.
So were you wild? You were a wild child?
Yeah. I wasn't serious about my relationship with Christ, but it had nothing to do with Catholicism.
Okay.
I always have to state that because Protestants like to jump on the bandwagon of beating up the Catholics. I'm like, where's that in the scripture? Well, they're wrong about this and they're wrong about that. Well, you know what? Maybe your church is really good about everything it says it does, but I saw how you pulled out of the parking lot. Hello? Or I saw how you spoke to your wife when you thought no one was listening. Don't give me that garbage.
Yeah.
It's not about a religion. It's about a relationship. Mm-hmm. And my parents had that. So I saw that, but I wanted nothing to do with it.
Okay.
My parents told me later, like much later as an adult, you know, when we would go to St. Charles for the teacher conferences, my sisters, because we're a good Catholic family, I'm born in 63, Lori's born in 64, Barbara's born in 65. The nuns asked my mom and dad, they said, so can we ask you a personal question? And my parents were like, yeah, I guess. Is David adopted?
Are
because
you
he's
serious?
Nothing like the other two. And my mom was offended. So my dad, I don't know who was offended, who wasn't, but I could see him probably laughing. They didn't tell me that till much later, but I can see that. I can get that. I have a younger brother, 7 years younger than me. And when Jeffrey moved back, he went to University of Rochester and then got a career in medicine. And he kind of like traveled all over the country with his bride and so on. By the time he came back to Youngstown, I don't know how many years ago now, 7, 9, he said, David, you know, I could single-handedly destroy your career. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, everybody thinks I'm you. People walk up to him, they're going in for the hug. They're going in for the handshake. And they're like, oh, wait, you're not David. They're like, yeah, I'm Jeff. So Jeffrey, my sisters, were completely opposite of me. Good kids, great students, wonderful athletes. And I wasn't. I said if foosball had been a school sport, then I could have been considered a jock. But since it wasn't, I'm not.
Right.
But you know what? Now that we're all in our 50s, we've all got our lane. My sisters have theirs. My brother has his. And I have this. And, you know, to your point, I did a lot of stupid stuff. Now, when I go to Teen Challenge, I didn't do nothing stupid. By not pointing at you, but anybody that's got some crazy stories.
There, right.
I have. I go to the Esther House, okay? That's all the girls. It's the girls' version. I call it the Estrogen House because it's all the ladies. And I get to do a study with them, a standing study, which every week is kind of cool. But there was one young lady there, and she was like hell-bent. She wanted to show me her mugshot. I'm like, wait a minute. Why do you – because I think they're just there because – then maybe they got in trouble with the courts or whatever. She goes, oh, no. She has 7 or 8 felonies. I'm like, wait, you look like such a nice little girl. How is that even possible? She goes, oh, Kahoot, I was horrible. And I'm thinking, by comparison, I was not bad. But that's, again, doesn't matter. I wasn't happy. I didn't have peace. I didn't have joy. I was mad, so I wanted everybody to be miserable with me. And once God got a hold of my whole heart in 1981, it was a switch flipped.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
It did. And I kind of heard a little bit about the moment that God got to you, I guess is what you could put it. So I don't, have you heard that, Dawn?
What's that?
About that guy in Florida that gave him that paper from Boardman.
How do you know that?
I told you.
Now you say that, yes.
It wasn't Florida.
You did your homework.
It was Kill Devil's Hills,
I did hear
North
that
Carolina,
story. Yes.
In a laundromat.
Okay,
yes,
yeah.
In a laundromat.
Can you tell that so we have time?
You're killing me, Smiles.
Way to do your homework, Dad.
So,
awesome.
Again, a little back history on this, okay?
This is good.
So I've just graduated Boardman High School in 1981. Because there's a lot of people out there, maybe within my own family, that don't know some of the sordid details, I won't give them. But let's just say that my mindset was becoming comfortable with the concept of living a life of crime.
Okay.
That's a really good, if Pastor Glenn looks at this, he'll be like, I love your version of it better. Well, I can't say it on TV or whatever I'm in right now. So I'm getting high with a friend of mine in his room. Okay. We're blowing the weed out the window and Vic's trying to tell me about Jesus. And I'm like, Vic, man, we can't talk about Jesus while we're getting high. He's like, why? I said, because it's not cool. He's like, he invented weed. I'm like, oh, I never really thought about that. So I'm like, okay, cool. So we're still getting high. And then he turns to him. He says, Hootie, let me ask you a question. That was my nickname, Hootie, H-O-U-T-Y. He goes, if you died today, would you go to heaven? I start laughing. I said, pretty sure no. He goes, well, that's a problem. I'm like, why? Is that a problem? Why are you asking me this? And he like got heavy duty on me. Right? Heavy duty on me.
Wow.
And he said, you're going to hell if you don't have your sins forgiven through the blood of Christ. I'm like, dude, I think you're doing you're smoking something besides this. So I shoved my fingers in his chest and I said, you have no right to judge me. And I walked up Forest Garden in Boardman, Ohio, took a personal inventory of my life and decided I'm going to go home and hop in my parents' tub with my dad's 22 and end my life. Because clearly I'm a joke. I knew enough by watching my sisters and brother and how my parents were that I didn't fit in. And I just felt like, you know, being the misfit, why continue to bring shame and embarrassment to the family? Let's just check out. But as I was walking up Forest Garden, I said, God, if you're real, help me. And I always tell people, I used to joke and say, trees began to sway and cloud formations look like angels. And I heard a harp. And I did that once in a church and a lady goes, praise the Lord. And I'm like, man, I'm just kidding. Nothing happened. She looked at me like, what is wrong with you? So I said, God, if you're real, help me. I cut through the yards. I went home. Of course, did not attempt to take my life. And didn't know what that meant. And a week or two later, I went on my first of many vacations with my then girlfriend, now bride, the Billettes. My wife was a Billette. She had, ever since she was a little girl, they went to the Outer Banks every year. On the way to the Outer Banks, they would stop in Virginia Beach to see my father-in-law's sister. She lived there with her family. So I'm on this trip down. I stole a whole carton of cigarettes. I smoked about 2 or 3 packs of Winston's a day.
Wow.
And I stole a whole carton of cigarettes from where I don't know. And sorry, I'm not making recompense for the cigarettes now. But sitting there in the back of the van, I was coughing. I had a horrible smoker's cough, like a bad
one. A couple packs a day, I can
well,
imagine.
Plus like a lot of other stuff, too. Including, you ever smoke just resin? And anyway, so I'm doing all this stupid stuff, and I had this horrific cough. And I felt like Mrs. Bullett was looking at me in the mirror, which is not correct because Mr. Bullett's driving and the mirror's aimed for him. It was the first thing that I could go back to and go, holy cow, like God did a miracle. Yeah. I wasn't even asking for it. I just reached into my suitcase and I started whipping packs of cigarettes out of the back of the van. Like, I don't want to smoke anymore. And I know Sudo threw that last pack, and I'm like, well, that was really stupid.
Right, now I got to go steal another carton.
Yeah, probably not a problem, but I never smoked again. In fact, you know, the next place we would have stopped had a cigarette, you know, sadly. I'm sorry, back then I wasn't a Christian yet, and I was doing the world stuff. I rolled up a joint, I'm like hitting a couple hits of that, thinking that's like a cigarette. But I never smoked again. And then when we get to Virginia Beach, Susie's aunt and uncle, Uncle Frank and Aunt Doris, who are mentioned in my book, they loved the Lord. They had a relationship with Christ. And they just kind of watched me and listened and went, well, we don't like this little boy. That kid's got some issues, and I don't want him being around our niece. Susie's a good girl, and this kid don't seem like it. He needs Jesus. And I don't know what they did. I do remember when we went for the prayer, I'm used to a Catholic prayer, you know, blessed art thou and these thy gifts. So Uncle Frank says, let's pray for the food. And I'm ready to start going like this. And he goes, Father. And I looked up thinking he's talking to his dad or something. I'm like, what is going on here? So that was my experience with the Dixons. Little did I know God was using them to hound me,
right?
And the Heavenlies. Outer Banks, one day it was raining at the beach, and I said to the kids, you know, in 1981, there wasn't cable TV as we know it now. There wasn't internet. So what do? You got to go do something. I'm type A. I want to go do something. So I talked my then girlfriend, now wife, into going to a laundromat and buying some beer and sitting in the back and being cool, right? We'll wash a sock or something. I don't even remember what we washed. But while we were in a dryer section, this kid came in, and I could see him just as clear as you are to me. Walked by two rows of washing machines, walked right up to me, and he said, God told me to come in here and tell you he loves you. And I started laughing. I said, really? And he goes, yes. I said, well, since God told you to tell me that, was there anything else God wanted you to have me know? And he kind of looked at me. I said, I'm not interested. And he looked at me. I said, we're cool. And he started to turn to leave, and I looked at Sue and went, psycho. And he spun back around. I thought, all right, we're going to have a fist. I'm not a tough kid, but I had a bad attitude. I thought, we're going to have a fist fight right here in a laundromat. Instead, he hands me this Bible track. I don't know what a Bible track. But there's a technique in sales. When you hand people something, most often they will take it. Mm-hmm. It's just weird. But so he handed me the Bible track, and I took it. He said, I gave my life to Christ a few years ago. He shared a 1-minute testimony. He was in the Navy, addicted to drugs and alcohol, ruining his life. God changed his life. His whole sole purpose is to tell others he can do the same.
Sounds
for you.
Familiar.
You should read this. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Well, I stuffed it in my back jeans pocket. And that night when I was emptying my pockets, I took it out and I looked at it. And I, you know, even an audience of four people here, do any of you have this weird tendency where you always look at the back of the book first and maybe kind of thumb through the back first, right?
That.
So when I did that, there was mailing addresses on the back, and two meant nothing to me. And this kid, I don't know who he is. I don't know where he was from. I don't know what his name was. He gave me a Bible tract that had Cosmo DiBartolo's mailing address. Nobody even knows who Cosmo is anymore, but he's an awesome man in his late 90s and loved the Lord. He lived in Youngstown on Glenwood Avenue. And the side street, was Forest Garden.
Oh,
Victor's house was across the street, and Cosmo's was there. Now, I didn't know that yet. I just saw Youngstown, Ohio. That just freaked me out. I told no one because I thought maybe I'm flipping out. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is like somebody's messing with me. Mm-hmm. Well, when we got home from that trip, I had gotten my license taken away. So I hopped on my bicycle at 18 and I drove down Mayflower to Forest Garden, hung a left to the rest of Forest Garden to Glenwood. And as I was starting to look for addresses, it was the first one. And I'm like, how is this possible? And it was all those little God winks that kind of accumulated to where you finally go, huh, maybe he really does love
me.
No
kidding.
Maybe he really does have a plan for my life. And that's why, again, when I'm going into a school, and this has happened and I won't do it because we have cameras. I had a kid give me the finger. And I mean, like he was in the back room doing this to me. Sorry, I just did it. And I'm thinking... Okay, I think he's giving me the finger, but what if that poor kid only has one finger on that hand and that's the one? So I walked the room to see, nope, he has three other fingers and a thumb. He is giving me the bird. And I thought for a second, like, what do you do? I mean, you're speaking, you see someone giving you a finger. Most adults would be like, hey, not cool, cut it out or get out. And I'm like, no, remember, hurting people hurt people. And that's what I was doing. That's what I did. I got busted. I gave a finger to a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I heard from behind me, Mr. Koo, would you like to tell Mr. So-and-so what you just did? I'm like, no, we're cool. And that was a 3-day suspension. So I thought, no, let them fly it. So about, I get 7 health classes. I think they're like 52, 3 minutes each. Within the 50 some minutes, the bird went away. The bell rang. Kid was the first one to come up. And he said, Mr. Koo, I want to apologize. And I messed with him. I said, for what? He goes, you know. I said, no, dude, I don't know. What are you talking about? He goes, I was the student that gave you the finger. I said, dude, man, I thought you were telling me I was number one. And he started laughing. And I said, I love your passion, but it's misguided. I'd take a kid like you every day and put you on my team of life because you've got guts, but you got to get your head right because I didn't do anything to you. Now, that was a seed that was dropped. I have some in ministry that go, well, you know, you don't get to share the gospel. Nope, I don't. I can't. But you know what? What we just did there with that kid may be the very thing that draws him to that place. And we'll never know, just like that kid in the laundromat, he has no clue. Yeah. I always say, you know, I understand the crowns, okay? But I got to tell you, people always say, so, you know, are you looking forward to meeting Jesus? And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be amazing. I mean, honestly. But what I want is a PHAT crown. I want a fat crown. I want an obnoxiously unbelievable, what the crap did you do to get that thing? And then, because what do we do with it? It says it's one of our forms of worship is we lay it at his feet. But the dude that shared Jesus with me in 81 in the laundromat with that Bible track.
Like, think of his crown, right?
He's going to be like, why is mine so big? Like, because I'll be honest, in 1981, I stopped witnessing. I met this guy in the laundromat. He was such a jerk. I stopped doing. Because all of what you did is what I am an extension of. And we all are. That was one question that I talked for almost 20 minutes for you.
I love it. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing is I remember you said that. I heard you share that story. And I remember you saying that guy has no idea. And what if he stopped? And I think that is a good question that we could ask in that facet as well as every other facet. When you're doing what you know you're called to do, when you're being the person that you're called to be, making a difference in a city or in schools or in lives, in your family, and you feel like the resistance you're getting is all you see. And then what if you stop? Like, what if you don't keep on going? What if he had not? What if he had not turned around and give you the track because you had already told him
and
been smart with him, you know?
Absolutely.
So just really that has really stuck with me over the years that since I heard that. That's just cool. You just don't know. You don't know.
No. And as much as I just shared all that, there are still days I go, maybe I'm kidding myself. And that's those days we talked about that this morning. One of the spiritual elements of leadership is failure. You know, and sometimes people say, well, I just keep failing. Well, no, you don't. You keep failing at other things, but those things you've already failed at, you are no longer failing at. So you're actually succeeding. There's just no retreat. Okay. And the armament in the scriptures is for the front. Yes, there's parts in the back, but there's no retreat. And the thing that we need to remember is Zechariah 4:6. Sorry, I'm like not even talking to you. Zechariah 4, I'm so hot this fire. Zechariah 4:6 says, not by might nor by power, but by his spirit. And what I don't want to become, which if I may be honest, I was as a salesman because I was hungry and I was straight commission. I don't want to ever be a manipulator. I don't want to manipulate people's emotions. People say, well, your talk is so emotional. Yeah. But there are stories about people whose lives have been impacted and changed.
It's real.
It's real. Here's a guy sitting here who can attest to the fact that I would go to chapel. I had no clue who he was. And yet somehow I was having an impact. Okay. And others, you know, I go back to Marcus McFalling, and he came up to me at Teen Challenge and said, I want to do what you do. And I said, what do you want to do? He goes, I want to be a speaker. I said, why? He says, because I love kids and I have a story. I said, well, that sounds like that would make sense to God. So let's pray for that. And if there's anything I can do to help or any tools I have or suggestions I can make, I'll do it for you, bro, because it's not about me. It's about us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was just recently in a school and I got to talking to one of the teachers and she told me about a student that messaged and said, hey, I won't be in school for a few days. And we were talking about some of the home lives that these kids go through. But what had happened was he got jumped and beat up and robbed and then left for dead. And so that, but the text that he sent to the school was, hey, I won't be in school for a couple of days.
Right.
So the stories behind the faces, the people, you know, who are sitting in the classes, there's, she began to tell me some of the situations, and I don't know the student. It wasn't like she was telling me names or, or you know, invading privacy, but just some of the stories that are happening in one of our city schools. If I said the name of the school, you guys would know the school. And the students are hurting, and there's nobody telling them that they're important, that they're loved, that they could be the next solution to the world's problems, that maybe they could make a difference, and they're fending for themselves, and they're doing the best they can. And the picture is sometimes disrespectful. It's frustrating.
Oh yeah.
You know, I'm sure you see it more than Heather.
It's demoralizing. It's demoralizing. I say, I feel like this guy who goes out and saves a fish's life and tosses it back out in the water. And little did I know there's a whole pool of, or what do they call that? Of
sharks.
Sharks or piranha. And I'm like,
predators.
But I can't stop, you know, not to digress or keep topping stories, but at a middle school. So middle school, we're talking fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. This was my fifth and sixth grade assembly. And then I had a seventh and eighth after that. So they're either fifth or sixth graders. After I was finished, the principal had some very kind things to say to me. And one of the things he said was, I think you really impacted two of our students. He said, I was very intentional about watching them. He said, unfortunately, they just came back to school a few weeks ago. A few months ago, their father came home and the kids were there. And the father shot dead their mother and then killed himself in front of these boys. I was speechless. And I looked at the principal and I said, would you mind if I grabbed five of our books and just ran down and spoke in very general terms to encourage those two boys plus the other three with them? He said, yeah, I think that'd be nice. So I grabbed five books. I ran down. I said, hey, man, I heard some of you guys had some crazy stuff happen to your lives in the last few months. Remember what I said. Don't quit. Somehow this is going to be okay. I don't know how, I don't know when, but trust me, it'll be okay. Not right now, but just don't quit. And I handed every kid a book. I packed up my stuff after my seventh, eighth grade assembly. I got in the car, and as I started to drive home, I just wept, because those kids matter. And now they have those images in their minds. You know, I don't even play the video games, mostly because I'm not good at it. But I just can't imagine seeing someone you love being killed, and then someone that maybe they loved him too, I don't know, killing himself. But those kids needed something. You know, I keep mentioning our book, 72 pages, pictures included. Why do we leave the book behind? Because there's things I can't say in the school, but the kids need to know. Adults need to know. And we know that this book, it's very basic. But you know what? There's enough truth in here. It's like I say when I speak in schools and or when I do assemblies, I said, do you think I'm telling the truth now? Because I'll usually be there about 45 minutes into my 90. And they're like, yeah, good. Let's keep going. Now, when you can get a kid to say, yeah, I believe you're telling the truth.
Can we put, I don't know if this is possible. I'm just kind of putting this out on the ledge. Can we put a link where people could get that book?
Sure.
People who are viewing?
Yeah. I mean, we did a book launch at Barnes and Noble. I think it's on Amazon. Honestly, the friend who helped me write this book, Kathy Palumbo, she's awesome. She's like, this book's going to be huge. And I'm like, I hope it is. Yeah. And you know what? Both of us have been disappointed in the fact that it hasn't gotten into more people's hands, but that's not our problem.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes the work we do, we think there should be an immediate response. Maybe I'll be dead before this book ever has its real
New York's bestseller, right? Number one bestseller.
Yeah. I don't believe in luck, but that would be the way it would work out.
I'll cover this. Why don't we, if you want to win a copy of the book, just comment on this video, and within the next, I don't know, 3 days or something, we'll pick a winner and reach
out. Do that and just give me their mailing address, and talk as cheap will pay for mailing the book.
Okay.
It's like $400, but we'll take care of it. And you know what I'll do is we'll give them a couple of SIPPOG bracelets. You know, the SIPPOG thing, I know, and I don't get, you know, people go, I got a word from the Lord. I don't get a lot of those. I spend a lot of time in the word, but, you know, we were in Florida for a launch conference, which was to basically help our organization get more traction out there speaking. And just God dropped it right in my head, because the guy was like, come up with something creative, something different, an acronym. And when he said acronym, I'm like, I wrote out Standing in the Presence of Greatness, SIPPUG. That's a weird word. I Googled it. It didn't exist. I'm like, that's our word. And you know what? If you Google SIPPUG right now, anywhere in the world, I'm the Fallon Baldwin guy that shows up. Yeah. But what's cool about that is when I go places, and this happens often, and I mean not just here in Youngstown, not in the local area. We've been in Florida, and a young lady was our waitress at a O'Charley's, and she goes, you're that guy. Oh. And I said, oh, yeah? What's that guy say? And she looked at me. I said, what am I standing in the presence of? And she just beamed. She goes, greatness, you are that guy. I said, yeah. And that message is still true.
You know
true.
What? Can I just, and this is the last thing I said, I'll say, I know we're getting short on time.
We got 10 minutes.
But I worked at Best Buy for a while, and you actually came in to get some GoPro stuff, right? A while back, right?
Wow.
And as you were walking out, one of my fellow associates recognized you and said, he came to my school. And she began to tell me, this is somebody I would never have guessed would have any idea of God. And she knew, she mentioned that you had spoken at her school. And that was powerful. I was like, yeah. I was just stunned because I had no clue that, you know, she recognized, she didn't say anything, but after you walked away, she said that.
But you know what keeps me humble about those stories? Because I don't ever sit here and go, yeah, because that's how I roll.
Right.
I remember what God used in the Bible to speak.
A donkey.
And I remember what he said. World, I know what he said he would do if we wouldn't praise him. He'd make rocks praise him.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep telling stories, but may I tell one more quick one?
Yeah, but we got 9 minutes.
All right, I'm up in New York. I'm speaking. The principal had asked me not to have any spiritual references. At that time, I was working for Fellowship of Christian Athletes before we started TIC, Talk is Cheap. And I respected those wishes, although I got in trouble with her later because Chris Sutton's shirt in the picture says God's property, which I never noticed before. Yeah. And she was upset about that. But here's the crazy thing. So I have no spiritual references in my talk. Talk is over. A couple kids stick around. And this one kid, I'm like, there's Satan's son, because he just looked as demonic as anything I ever saw. And I don't mean just piercings and tats, but the dark clothes, the evil look. And I'm like,
Charlie Borden.
No, Borden didn't look this nasty. Okay. But this kid says, can I talk to you for a minute? And I literally said, yeah, right here. He goes, no, I need to be in private with you. I said, no, bro, I can't do that, because I'm thinking, because you're going to kill me. Okay. You know what he does? We sit down in the front seats, nobody around. He starts crying. And I'm like, just listen, keep your mouth shut. He said, and I, you know, got to be careful here. He says, my dad was a pastor, but he always beat us. He beat my mom. And he finally walked away from the ministry, and he's a prison guard now, and he's worse now than ever. He said, I hate God. He said, but today, listening to you, I get it. My dad messed up, but I don't have to be messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not serious about his relationship with God, but I want to be. And I'm sitting there going, dude, hold on a minute. Do you understand the conversation I just had with your principal an hour and a half ago in her office?
Right.
And you're telling me this? So I say to anyone out there who wants to say, well, you know, you have to be real specific. No, you don't, because you've been prayed up, you're readied up, and now we're going to let God do the rest. He doesn't really need us. He's inviting us to join him, is what Henry Blackaby teaches. So where is that kid today? I don't know. I'm not a creeper. I don't like, hey, how are you now? You know, I always tell kids, you know, I'm not your best friend.
Now,
okay.
Right? You can show that stuff nowadays.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Well, my board used to say, you touch so many kids. I say, we don't touch no kids.
Right?
All we do is impact. Every so often I break the rule and give a hug. But yeah, go ahead.
But again, just to kind of wrap it up, it's all about seeds, right? And I think my wife and I actually had this conversation. She gets frustrated a lot because she feels like she sows a lot of the seeds, but I don't necessarily acknowledge her for the fruit. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because again, I'm married.
Do
right?
a better job of that.
I am. Again, sometimes we talk about it, especially after like
husband. Yeah, remember, you're still dating, buddy.
Right.
But okay. Like, and you will not do any better than this. So
I know.
She's awesome.
Believe me. But it's that same thing. Like, she won't necessarily get to see maybe the fruit because somebody else will say it and I'll catch it differently because I didn't hear what she was saying. Maybe because in the moment I heard it with the tone, maybe from my wife, that maybe wasn't a tone, but I heard it. Like, she was like, hey, babe. And I was like, what? Right? Like,
yeah.
But then somebody else, my friend's like, hey, dude, guess what? I'm like, dude, that's the most brilliant thing I ever heard, right? Caroline's there, like, dude, I said it like last week, bro.
Right.
Like, but it's that same thing. We it's about seeds,
right?
And planting the seeds and inspiring hope. You know, again, getting that one kid to maybe think differently about himself. I like to be candid too. I noticed this week, right? I got my Jordan 1s on this week, and I actually got a pair of Jordan 3s. They actually released. When I seen Marcus a couple weeks ago, yeah. I had a Marcus at the mall. And long story short, I got to get this pair of Jordan 3s. And I was sitting there in my house, and I was looking at my 1s and my 2s. And I was like, or my 1s and my 3s. I got the Jordan 2s. And I remember my wife gets on me at the time, like, why do you like shoes so much? Like, what is it about shoes? I'm like, I don't know. I like shoes. Fourth grade, on the bus with a pair of McGregor Jordans on. I was fourth grade. I didn't know what Jordans were yet. Like, I didn't know who Michael Jordan was, so I was just – but I had a pair of Kmart shoes on. But I was a new kid. It was my first day on the bus, and everybody thought they were Jordans. Bro, come here. Oh, look. Hey, call it. Oh, wait. Those aren't real. Oh, get out of here. Right? Like, and I think, honestly, again, like, that's why I was like, that's why they had this conversation, kind of why I do this stuff.
Us.
Because I was fourth grade.
Yep.
I'm 44 years old, and I'm still buying $100 tennis shoes to this day because in fourth grade, somebody told me there was value in my shoes that made me somebody. But it goes back to what you're saying. It's the standing in the presence of greatness, right? So many times we miss it with the outside things. And we take what the world wants us to think. Like, again, like, my tennis shoes make me somebody.
That's such a good story.
Right? Like,
yeah.
And because I wanted to be greatness, right? I wanted to be. And I wasn't, though, because, like, no, those are.
You
want to
be cool. You want
right?
to fit in. You want
to
be popular.
But we all feel fake, right? We all have fake shoes, right? Like, really, right? We all deal with that. That's something that makes us feel fake and not even qualified. I said, even have, like, again, like, I joke every week, like, they're letting me do this, right? Like, Dave, who is letting me do this? Like, a couple years ago, you know what I mean? Like, we joke, a couple years ago, you wouldn't want to be friends with me. You know Don? Oh, geez, I don't know that guy, right? Now you're like, gosh, wow, it's like Comedians Network, but it's all seeds, man. And it goes back to, again, just like that simple thing, like, it's just, as simple as that was in fourth grade, if that would have been a different scenario, Romans 8:28, my path, my life, I get it. What would it maybe look different, though, had in fourth grade on the bus if my shoes didn't matter?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I get it, but I'm just, what if?
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just 40 years later, I'm just putting it together.
You know, that's the power of acceptance.
Yeah.
If you would have been accepted if you had the right shoes.
Yeah.
And you weren't accepted because you didn't have the wrong shoes. Yeah. And I just want to say that this is one of my favorite verses in the Bible is, people are so, it's always good to know that we're loved. In fact, sometimes I'm reminded of how powerful that is. But there's something about being accepted. And the Bible does say that we are accepted in the beloved. And sometimes just being accepted, if we would realize that and then show that more to people around us, how different that would have been if they would have just accepted Dawn, not based on the shoes, based on who Dawn was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yet, deeper than that, knowing that God does that
no matter what,
He accepts us, not based on our shoes, not based on our righteousness, not based on our perfection, but because of who we are, because who He made us to be,
The kind of shoes we have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So about that.
It's the I am again. Like Dave said over this weekend, you got to meet my buddy Dave. She got to meet Dave Clemente. She spoke at Brett Spears Church this week.
Very cool.
But day one, Dave. Yeah. Cool. Right. Another cool story. But yeah, guys. So yeah, we're gonna wrap it up here shortly. We got about another minute to go. But Dave, thanks for coming out. They go by quick. Next time, I'm gonna just bring some steaks down here, and some shorts, right? We just sit by the fire.
Is pretty, but I can't believe we haven't had to put any wood on there yet. It's like that wood's amazing.
TalkIsCheap.com.
TalkIsCheapInc.com.
TalkIsCheapInc.
But you can find it with Sitpog, SITPOG.com.
Okay, and it'll rewrap. Comment on this video if you want to win a book.
Yeah, sure.
A couple of bracelets.
I said, I went through the book myself. Very cool. I went through it twice. And again, keep it around sometimes just for touch ups and those, just out of those moments. Sometimes I just kind of grab it and see what's in it for me. But Dave, again, thanks for coming out. Debbie, we appreciate you. We thank Youngstown Studios and Joe for having us out. Again, Dave, we appreciate you. We keep doing what you're doing, man. God bless you.
You too, my
keep
friend.
Seeking. And again,
keep
going. That's it. We're on this together.
Keep going.
So, thanks, guys. Until next time, keep it fresh and we'll see you next week.